This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
This is the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today we've got Tim O'Malley from IrishEyes.com with us. We're going to be talking about the Florida State-Notre Dame game coming up on Saturday, a top five matchup between two undefeated teams for the first time since the famous Game of the Century in 1993, the last time that these two teams faced each other when they were undefeated. So, Tim, good to have you with us.
Hey, great to be here, Jason.
So, obviously, everybody's looking forward to a really intriguing matchup this weekend between two programs that have continued, ever since these two coaches have been hired, have continued to move upward nationally. Going back to the 2011 bowl game in the Champ Sports Bowl, these two teams have really been moving upward. Notre Dame, of course, went to the national championship game the next year, and then Florida State won the national championship the year following, and now they collide with real chances to make the college football playoff. What do you think has been the real difference since Brian Kelly took over at Notre Dame in terms of why the program has taken the steps forward that it has, and why Notre Dame has come back to the national forefront in the way that they have?
He started from the ground up. He knew that he inherited a bit of a mess in terms of the program. It seems weird to hear that from the outside, but Notre Dame had serious issues on both lines ever since, and it wasn't since Lou Holtz left. The lines were good under Bob Davie, so you're looking at about 10 to 12 years of issues up front, and you can't contend with teams like Florida State and Alabama and SEC school, powerful SEC schools without good offensive and defensive lines. He built from the ground up. He built defense first, and that's what got them to the national championship game, was a stout front seven and a defense that played discipline. And that's what really the downfall was last year when they fell off a little bit, was a lot of the guys that returned, a lot of the guys that are in the pros now, had a little bit of a fat cat syndrome, and I was concerned that that might have permeated the program. But this group is a youth-filled group with a small blend of veterans that do play, and I think Brian Kelly loves that blend. It's something where he has everybody following what he wants. They, as he said, the seniors know they need help from the young guys because the young guys have the most talent, and the young guys don't know any better. They just want to play football. It's the best blend they've had since since 2012, but that was a veteran group that was battle-scarred. You had Tyler Eifert and Manti Te'o. They were there when Kelly was losing to Navy in Tulsa, and all of a sudden these guys had come through the fire, and Kelly really, just when he came in, realized we cannot win, especially where we're going to be playing football without great line play. And surprisingly, they've received some great line play this year, at least on the defensive side.
Yeah, and they actually, the lines this year, the defensive line in particular, you lost some really good players. I mean, obviously, Lewis Nix was so critical to the scheme and to the success of that defense in 2012 and last year until some injury issues. But this team seems to have done pretty well up front, with some younger players, and then a change from Bob Diaco's 3-4 scheme, which was a little more conservative, had relied on the two gapping of the nose tackle, some of those things, and then you've got this new scheme that you're seeing from Brian Van Gorder is completely different, uses a very different one gap even scheme. What have you seen from the Notre Dame defensive line, and how do you think they'll match up with Florida State in this game?
First, they had to change out of necessity because losing Nix, Stephon Tuitt, Prince Shembo, and the previous year, they had Capron Lewis Moore, who was a fifth-year senior from Texas, that also was perfectly suited for Diaco's scheme. They were just short on interior defensive line bodies. Now, Sheldon Day is a junior from Indianapolis, former five-star recruit. He played extensively as a freshman on that 2012 team. So Notre Dame fans knew what they had in Day. He battled a sprained ankle last year, and that really hurt the defense. Notre Dame people knew that Sheldon Day would be a player this year, but it was everybody else. You're a little bit worried about it, and that's, you know, I'm not exaggerating. It was literally everyone else that you didn't know what you were going to get. And what has happened is Jerron Jones, who was Day's classmate, but he has played so much less football than Sheldon, Jones was on the scout team this week last year before Notre Dame played USC as a sophomore. Now, that's, you know, it was a demotion, too. Since then, he fought his way through when Lewis Nix got hurt last year. He had to play, and he's played well this year. The interesting thing about Jones is he's a 4.5 to 5-star talent that, you know, you didn't know how much he liked football. And it turns out now that he's put in a position where he is counted on, he's really thrived. And, look, he will not be the player Day is on Saturday night, but Jerron Jones is going to get some solo blocking assignments from Florida State, and that's going to help him because he's a 6'5", 315-pound guy, good athlete, quick feet with long arms. And, you know, Sheldon Day has to be double-teamed to be accounted for. Every team does it. So, really, those two have been rocks. If they lose one of them, it would be trouble not only obviously Saturday night, but over a long haul. But they have a deep group. They use 8 defensive linemen, definitely back next year. You have about, it's not freshmen, you have 4 redshirt freshmen or true freshmen out there, and a lot of the guys they bring in a new position, Van Gorder started this season, the rush end, they're also freshmen. So it's a young group, it's a much faster group, they're not as stout at the point of attack, but they rotate a lot, and they're really, it's an aggressive team. I would be shocked if Notre Dame got pushed around. I could see Notre Dame losing, of course, just because of Florida State can flip a switch and be great. I can see them losing big, I mean, but I don't think you're going to get pushed around this defensive line. It's an intriguing group that is going to be really good next year and is far ahead of what anybody thought they would be this year. If we had this podcast in August, I'd say, well, Notre Dame's going to have at least one loss because Stanford's going to throw them all over the field and Florida State will be number 2. But that, you know, Notre Dame destroyed Stanford. They held them to 47 rushing yards, which just doesn't sound possible for a you know, veteran group there in Stanford and all these young guys in Notre Dame, but I don't expect that, of course, Saturday night. But it's a unit that has played far beyond expectations this year.
Yeah, what's funny is that actually when we did our preview of Notre Dame for Noel Digest in the preseason, I was one that was saying I would not be surprised if this Notre Dame team, looking at the roster, looking at what they're doing scheme-wise, I wouldn't be surprised if they were unbeaten coming into Tallahassee and were a legitimate playoff potential team. I was pretty bullish on Notre Dame coming into the year just based on what they had what they brought in recruiting-wise and what they had on campus. Now, you've still been able to survive the loss of 5 players, 3 of whom are really, you know, important players for this team. And this is another parallel between these teams. I mean, you mentioned with Notre Dame being a young team. Florida State, interestingly, on defense in particular, is very young. I mean, they've got 1 senior in their whole 2 deep, who's a backup defensive tackle. So there's a lot of parallels in that regard. And then the other parallel that, you know, obviously fans of both schools are not real happy about to see is that both schools have been embroiled in some sort of off the field controversy and attention for the better part of the last 2 years, whether we're talking about the suspension for Everett Golson last year, whether we're talking about now the loss of 5 players over the course of this year at Notre Dame, whether we're talking about all of the Jameis Winston stuff, which, you know, I imagine that every fan of any other program in the country is completely sick of Jameis Winston and Winston-related news at this point, because I know that Florida State fans are completely sick of, you know, Jameis Winston off-the-field news at this point. But, you know, this is something that both programs have had to deal with the last couple of years and have really done a terrific job blocking out the noise and still playing well on the field and sort of rallying the troops and taking an us against the world kind of mentality. And so you've got 2 teams coming into this game, I think, that are more battle scarred in terms of the kind of attention that you have to pay to remaining focused with all of the extra stuff going on than just about anybody else in the country. So that's another factor here that I think is pretty interesting, having seen that. Now, going back to Everett Golson, he's obviously a pretty significant piece to this year. I mean, he's one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I don't think there's any way around that. Both quarterbacks in this game, neither quarterback has ever lost a regular season game. You've got to remember that the only game that Golson has lost was against a very good Alabama team in the 2012 national title game. So, you know, this is a game where you've got a winner at quarterback. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen from him so far this year, how the offense has changed with him back? And then also, obviously, he's had some trouble with some turnovers the last couple of weeks, and talk about what's going on in that regard and what they're doing to try to correct that.
Yeah, the recent turnovers are surprising. Just kind of flipping back, Golson is the offense. He makes it go. Their backup quarterback is Richard freshman Malik Zaire. Now, he came in the opening game, and, you know, he kind of etched his name in Irish lore because his very first play was a 56-yard run down the sidelines, but that was against Rice. And Brian Kelly has mentioned, look, no, there's no such thing as going to the bullpen. I know a lot of fans across the country remember when Golson was kind of being coddled as a redshirt freshman, Tommy Reese would come in. It is Golson's team. If Golson doesn't play well, a game will be close. If Golson doesn't play well against Florida State's going to murder Notre Dame. And the thing is, I do expect Golson to play well. Now, these interceptions and fumbles, he is just careless with the football in terms of fumbling. The interceptions are a big surprise, but you will see Everett Golson break containment on Saturday night and gain 10 to 15 yards. And when he turns it upfield, it's advantage Florida State because someone's going to come from behind and strip him. I don't know if the plan is going to be Golson, when you break containment, get the yards and get down or get out of bounds, but he loses the ball in the same manner every time. He gets stripped from behind after making a play. The last one against North Carolina, you could even see him taking his offhand to put it on there. But as he's going to the ground, he removes his offhand from the ball and someone knocks it out. It's really frustrating, and he has admitted it. It's a habit that he has. He says, I'm careless with the ball. We work on it every day in practice. Brian Kelly has admitted it. He can't bench the guy. You know, there's no such thing as tough love here. You got to live through it. So I think Golson's going to fumble a couple more times this year. I guess it just depends on which way the ball bounces, because he does not protect that ball when he's running. It's really not the same in the pocket. You know, you're not coming to strip him in the pocket or anything like that. He has a pretty good feel for the rush. But the mild concern of late is he's thrown four picks in the last three games. One of them was just him challenging a defense. You know, you're going to live with that because he throws the ball down the field. He's not a dink and dunk passer. But three others were kind of, I won't say freshman, I would say high school mistakes. One was like a little stick route that Brian Kelly was talking about this week, where he literally just threw a little bit behind and out, right? You know, a short out from the spot, and it was intercepted for a touchdown. Same thing happened against Syracuse. He got a little floppy. It's kind of funny because he completed 25 straight passes in the game, and all anybody remembers is that he also had two fumbles and two interceptions. So one of those against Syracuse, he just didn't see the safety coming down. And after the game, he said, I don't know, I didn't see the safety, I admit it. And, you know, it was the fourth quarter, they're up by three touchdowns, but it's the type of thing where you don't expect him to do that, and you it's going to knock him, obviously, not that this matters. It's going to knock him out of Heisman contention because he's going to keep throwing these kind of careless mistakes out there. But, yeah, Golson is, as you mentioned, there's no denying he's one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I think what Florida State fans will see, and Notre Dame's going to have to do this, is Everett Golson has a phenomenal arm. When he gets outside the pocket, he is not looking to get 7 yards. He is launching that thing downfield, and it'll be a fun game to watch because of that. I know that Notre Dame believes they have to get big plays to beat Florida State. They're not going to march down and, you know, go 15 plays and score on Florida State. So you will see Golson unleash one of the better arms in college football. He regularly is rolling left and firing about 55 to 60 yards downfield. So he's just a talent back there. You know, he's a little undersized, which I think bodes well for Notre Dame because as a senior with eligibility remaining for a fifth year, I believe he'll come back. He's not quite 6 feet tall, even though that's how he's listed. And, he's also a basketball player on grass. You probably saw some recent stories that he could have gone to play North Carolina on a basketball scholarship. And he's more quick than fast. I think that comes from basketball. He won't outrun Florida State. I think it's probably a little bit like Winston, but he's very effective in space. Guys don't get him one-on-one either. It's just that he's not going to, you know, take off and go for 60 yards or anything like that. But he's a player that is fun to watch, but he, for some reason, these turnovers, they don't seem like they're going to go away, and I don't think he can afford more than one Saturday.
Yeah, and the interesting thing in terms of that is that this, to me, is one of the more interesting matchups when I look at this game, because Florida State has had some trouble with mobile quarterbacks this year. They've had some trouble defending the edge in particular, and when I've watched Golson, he's been able to get to the edge, and he's been able to get yards upfield, and he's been able to extend plays and, like you said, throw deep downfield and challenge secondaries outside the pocket because he's able to break contain. And Florida State, you know, they've got one of the best defensive ends in the country in Mario Edwards Jr. But he's, you know, he's a 300-pound defensive end. He's more of a run-stopping defensive end, and in the scheme, the way that they use him, they two-gap him a lot, so he's not necessarily tasked with going after the quarterback in the way that you might expect. They play a lot of odd fronts where he's more of what you would expect from a – it's sort of a defensive end, defensive tackle hybrid in some ways and how he's used. And then there are other times where he's outside. Now, when he's outside – it's much harder for quarterbacks to get the edge on that side. The problem has been when he's either inside or on the opposite side from him, where Florida State has had some trouble setting the edge against the run and also containing quarterbacks and you know when they're trying to escape the pocket or when they're scrambling upfield. That other defensive end position has been a little bit of a problem for Florida State, to the point where true sophomore DeMarcus Walker and redshirt sophomore Chris Casher have now sort of given way to true freshman, really a freak, Lorenzo Featherston. Featherston is 6'7". He's got a 7'3 wingspan, 38-inch vertical, but he's only about 225 pounds. He's not a big kid. At 6'7", 225, you know, the kid looks... You know, he's not a big kid. You know, he's not real thick. And so when he's on the field, then that potentially gives Notre Dame a chance to run at him when they want to. He's been better against quarterbacks getting out of the pocket. It's much harder to get around him, in part because of that wingspan and the explosiveness to actually catch guys. But, you know, Walker and Casher have had more trouble chasing quarterbacks. They're not guys that are going to chase Golson down from behind, for example. And so that's a facet of this game. I'm curious to see how Florida State schemes against what Notre Dame's doing, because I think they know that the way, if I were doing this, what I would do as a defensive coordinator for Florida State, I would do everything in my power to make sure that Golson had to stay in the pocket, to compress the pocket with big bodies to make him have to throw over top of you. And whatever you do, don't let him break contain and don't get out of your rush lanes so that he can get upfield and make plays with his feet. That would be the primary thing that I would be focusing on preventing if I were the Florida State defensive coordinator. But again, they've had some trouble with that, particularly on the side opposite Mario Edwards. That to me is a lot of the game on that side of the ball. And I guess the next piece that I've got that I want to ask about there is Notre Dame's offensive line has been shuffled around a good bit so far. There's been some, you know, concerns at different points in the year. They did survive against a very good Stanford defensive front, you know, one of the three or four best defensive fronts in the country probably. But how does the Notre Dame offensive line match up with what they're going to be seeing against, you know, a very good defensive tackle in Eddie Goldman, a very good defensive end in Mario Edwards, and then, you know, Florida State's had some depth issues and some injury issues at some of the other spots along that line, but they do have a couple guys you really have to account for. How does Notre Dame's offensive line look to match up in this one?
At present, the two best players are the tackles. Junior Ryan Stanley, he flipped to the left side this year. You know, remember Zach Martin, of course, started 52 straight games for Notre Dame and was a first-round pick of the Cowboys. Stanley last year played on the right side, flipped to the left side, and he has been the best player, if not every week, almost every week. The second-best guy on the line at this point is likely fifth-year senior Christian Lombard. He started 13 games for that 2012 team at right tackle, which is where he is now. But since, in 2013 and to begin 2014, they moved him to right guard. Well, because of some struggles at tackle, he had to move back out there. And he seems just as comfortable as ever. He's not the future pro talent that Stanley is. But as a fifth-year guy, he's a pretty strong and pretty astute blocker. You know, he's not an amazing player, but he's also not going to make big mistakes. Now, the issue has been inside. Center Nick Martin, which is Zach's younger brother, actually, has been moved to left guard, and people thought it was because he was ineffective, and quite frankly, he was ineffective, but what it turns out is he has three torn ligaments in his thumb, so he can't snap. So he's moved to left guard, and he's still getting used to that position. He's a competitive football player that has looked better last week than he did against Stanford. Obviously, that could be because of the opponent he was facing.
Yeah, Stanford's a little better up front.
Well, a little better up front, but he just looked more comfortable, you know, in his third game at that left guard position. And that has made Matt Hegarty, who was a backup center for his whole career. He actually was put behind the eight ball in 2012 because he had a heart condition that required surgery. People thought he might have to retire. He was a four-star tackle that Kelly moved to center. I don't know if you know this, but Brian Kelly only recruits high school tackles. It moves them all over the place. So Nick Martin's high school tackle, too. But Hegarty's kind of a good story getting back, but he was beaten out during the, you know, during the fall camp. So they tried to have him play left guard. He got beaten out there by Connor Hanratty, who's his classmate. So just by virtue of Martin having that thumb injury, they wanted to keep Martin. He's a captain. They wanted to keep him in the lineup. He's at left guard. So Hegarty's at center, and there's still some issues there. Now, Hegarty does some things each week that are pretty impressive in the run game. He's a pretty good athlete. Once he gets leverage, he maintains it. But every game so far this year, there have been some of those just ridiculous-looking plays where he's barely out of his stance and someone's ripping through him. So I assume you're going to get three or four more of those against Florida State. That's, of course, tough to overcome. The other right guard is probably a future pro right guard, but he's a true sophomore, and I know Florida State fans from 2011 know what it's like to have young guys out there on the offensive line. Steve Elmer's a very good run blocker, struggled a little bit in pass protection still. He was playing out there at right tackle. They had to move him inside. The thing is, he's one of the five best linemen on the team, so they need to find a spot for him, and he's really a good drive blocker. Once he gets a hold of you, it's over, but he does not have the feet necessarily to go against Florida State's athletes in the pass rush. So I think you will see them fare pretty well running the ball. I know this Florida State defense isn't quite on par or hasn't been yet this year with the top five groups of the last three seasons in terms of stopping a run, but I suspect that Florida State's going to have some success going after Golson with pressure and interior pressure, which is the best kind of pressure because, you know, it makes you bounce outside the pocket. And more important than that, even if you say that he might not be contained that well when he gets on the edge, interior pressure just makes it tough to operate and hit those normal, everyday, second and seven routes that keep drives alive and keeps you out of third and long. And Golson right now does not trust the interior line, and Brian Kelly basically came out and said it. All the protection issues are not on the line. Part of it is when they do have good protection, Golson's bouncing around back there anyway.
Yeah, and it is much harder as a 5'11 quarterback than, you know, that's where, you know, a guy who's 6'4 or a little bit above that, like Winston, you know, that inside pressure doesn't affect you quite to the same degree as a 5'11 guy where you're just not able to see. You don't see as well when guys are able to compress the pocket, and you feel more cramped as a result, and that's a factor, I would assume, in some of that discomfort. I know they've been working with his footwork quite a bit in terms of climbing in the pocket at the right time. It looked to me like last week he was actually climbing the pocket too early at different points, and, you know, actually running into the pressure a little bit when he could have stayed back in the pocket a little bit. So there's been some issues, I think, just fundamentally as they're trying to get that taken care of. But you know, I think that's to me another big facet here. Again, Florida State's had some trouble stopping the run, a little bit less the last couple weeks as the defense is getting a little bit settled. But they've certainly had some trouble pressuring the quarterback. But then you say that, you know, Notre Dame's been giving up pressure on the quarterback. So it's one of those where, again, the matchup looks interesting. You know, what's actually going to happen is pretty interesting. The next thing that I've looked at when I've broken down some of Notre Dame in prepping is you guys have a really interesting this Notre Dame team has a really interesting group of wide receivers and sort of a diverse group of wide receivers. It doesn't look to me like there's any one particular big play guy in terms of a breakaway guy as much, but there's a lot of size and there's a lot of interchangeable parts. Can you talk about what Florida State secondary is going to have to go up against in this? And I'll precede that a little bit by talking about what FSU has in the secondary, obviously. You know, Florida State, I think, has probably the best three corners of any group in the country with Ronald Darby on one side. Then on the other side, on the boundary side, you have PJ Williams, and then in the slot, you have probably the best cover guy on the team, who's a true sophomore in Jalen Ramsey. All three of those guys are probably going to go in the first round. And all three of them are, you know, exceptional athletes above 5'11", you know, two of them are 6'2" or above and all run really well. But then you, behind them, you've got a little bit less experience at safety. Tyler Hunter was actually a starter at the beginning of last year, but hurt his neck at the very beginning of the season, missed the entire season with a neck injury. The first month of this year, he looked pretty uncomfortable still, was still settling in, looked a little bit like he was tentative to make the kind of contact that he did before the injury. And he's still not coming up and just hitting guys a ton. But he looks a lot more comfortable. He's settled in the last couple weeks. He's played very well since about the second half of the NC State game, which was Florida State's fourth game. On the other side, the other safety, you have Nate Andrews, who is a ball hawk. He's one of the guys that, he just always seems to be getting turnovers, whether it's fumble recoveries, whether it's, interceptions, that sort of thing. But he doesn't have, neither safety has the kind of range that Florida State's free safety last year, Terrence Brooks, who's now in the NFL, had. And also LaMarcus Joyner in the slot, who Ramsey has taken over for, had great range. Ramsey has good range as well. But neither safety has quite the range downfield that Florida State was used to last year in terms of an eraser. All five guys can cover a little bit. All five have some size. How does Notre Dame match up on the edge on offense? Because, again, what you're talking about, as Golson goes, so goes this offense. It's going to be important for them then to match up at those receiver positions. What can we expect there?
Yeah, it's a six-man group. It's rounded into a six-man group. Now, Deveris Daniels is one of the suspended players. He was supposed to kind of be the go-to guy, senior linchpin. He has NFL talent. He hasn't been there all year, and really the group has thrived, I think, because he was not there. He wasn't there in the spring for a different suspension academically, not cheating, but just a grade suspension. So this group didn't have him in the spring. They had to grow up then. They didn't have him for at least half of August camp, and they haven't had him all year. So they're beyond it at this point. This is the group. They knew what they're going to have, and there's a lot of talent, and there's no seniors. They're young six-pack of receivers, and the guy that's emerged a little bit, and I think people will be surprised by his speed, because people say SEC and Florida State speed, and in the old days, Miami speed. I haven't seen anybody run with Will Fuller yet. He's a guy from Philadelphia. He's slightly built. He looks a little bit like DeSean Jackson out there. Now, he's not as shifty as Jackson, and of course, Jackson has rare NFL speed. But Fuller, Notre Dame fans know all about Darby, and Darby's probably one of the fastest guys in the country, but it's going to be very interesting to see if Fuller can climb the ladder on Florida State's corners, because no one has run with him yet. Now, they haven't had to go against corners with that NFL pedigree. Wayne Lyons and Alex Carter from Stanford are very good, but they're more solid all-around, technique-driven players than the superb athletes. But Fuller has seven touchdowns. He scored a touchdown in every game except for, I believe, the Stanford game. And people have to play off of him because of his separation. Now, he scored a couple touchdowns on tunnel screens. He's getting a little bit better in the open field, but this is obviously his toughest matchup. Helping him is a classmate, sophomore Corey Robinson. He's the Admiral's son, as most people know. 6'5", about 215. 2 years from now, he'll be very difficult to stop because he'll be 6'5", 225, and it's just going to be a different type of football player out there. But he has the best hands on the team. You'll probably see a red zone play or two, especially inside the 10, where they just tap somebody against Corey Robinson, because Robinson goes up and gets the ball. And he is by no means a polished receiver. He's getting a little bit better between the hash marks. He kind of looks deliberate sometimes coming out of those cuts. But, when you have great hands in that frame, you can be a possession receiver against both teams.
Yeah, I'd expect after to see that, Florida State line up a lot of Jalen Ramsey opposite him because of Ramsey's size at about 6'3 at corner, which is unusual.
Yeah, that is, and that's an important matchup, because when he can also jump. He's got a little bit of, he was a basketball player when Kelly recruited him, so it's one of those things where the ball goes up in the air, and we see it practice, he goes and gets it. So that will be a huge matchup to watch if Ramsey's 6'3", and obviously with that athleticism. The third guy at this point is junior Chris Brown. He is the proverbial track guy going to football player. Right now, he hasn't been able to get downfield. Teams do play off him because he's not a complete receiver. I talked to him last week, and he said, my goal is to turn these hitch routes into 50-yard gains, but it's tough. He's catching most passes with his back to the defense because he's not the shiftiest guy. He actually admitted it. He is a triple jumper, straight line, 6'2", very lanky. I haven't seen him get downfield yet this year. That's what he did as a true freshman in 2012. He beat Oklahoma downfield on about a 55-yard throw by Golson.
Yeah, I remember that throw.
Yeah, that's
a great throw, too.
Yeah. And he's a more complete receiver now, obviously, than he was then. But he's still – this could be a tough – this will be a telltale game for Brown, because when he's going to face a guy as athletic as him, I think it might be tough for him to separate. And the same is true for the backup slot receiver, and they really alternate a lot. So the same backup slot, he's going to play a bunch. C.J. Procise, he's a former safety, former running back in high school. He's about 6 feet and 220 pounds and can run. Probably the worst ball skills on the team, to be frank, but he gets the ball. He rarely gets taken down by the first guy. He's tough on jet sweeps. He's very tough when he gets the ball on tunnel screens, and he can get downfield. I don't know if you saw any highlights of the Rice game. He caught a bomb touchdown where Golson threw it about 60 yards rolling left. He also dropped a bomb touchdown where Golson threw it about 60 yards rolling right. So, the ball skills are right there. He's learning, and he's actually their best special teams player. He's number 20. People see him all over the field, which could come in handy down against this team's speed in Tallahassee. And then there's Amir Carlisle, who's another converted running back playing the slot. He's a transfer from USC. And, I thought when he got moved to slot from running back last year, he basically got beat out as the fourth running back before the spring. I thought, well, that's nice. He's a good kid, and they're trying to find a spot for him. Before he got hurt in the Purdue game, sprained his knee. He was 12 for 12. In other words, Golson had targeted him 12 times with 12 catches and 2 touchdowns against Michigan. He was kind of a breakout guy. He looked quicker and more confident. I don't think he quite has the burst back. He's been back for 2 games. He did help against Stanford, had a crucial catch and run for about 26 yards, and he must feel okay because he took a jet sweep last week, but he was not the same guy we saw pre-injury, so that'll be pretty important. And the final guy who's just rounding into shape, you might remember Torrey Hunter Jr. from back in January 1st, 2013, broke his femur at a high school all-star game, and he just got back into it. He's a junior by class, a sophomore by class, but this is his first half season. He's only played a couple games. Not sure how much you'll see him unless Fuller gets tired. Kelly really wants to get Hunter involved because he has great ball skills and really just a playmaker out there in practice, but he really only knows the one position right now, and that's behind Fuller. And Kelly said sometimes it's hard to take Fuller off the field. Basically, without Fuller, they would have lost to North Carolina last week. He had 32-yard catch on 3rd and 20. He had a bomb touchdown. He drew an interference on a bomb. He actually drew 3 pass interference calls. And he also caught a tunnel screen that he took for a touchdown. So I think you'll see 5 guys. Hunter might be the 6th. And this is their biggest test. But it's interesting. They'll all be back next year with Golson. It's a young group, and maybe not having a guy really helped them out, because if that guy was going to be DeVaris Daniels, he still had some issues, man, that he didn't know the playbook going into his senior year. And, a lot of ugly passes by Tommy Reese last year, and quite frankly, DeVaris Daniels not getting the basic check at the line of scrimmage. And people love to blame Reese. That was a Notre Dame fan pastime. But it wasn't always him. So these guys are dialed in a little bit more with Golson.
Yeah, that's critical. And that's something that's always irritating is when, fans will blame the guy who's chasing the wide receiver, even if it wasn't necessarily his zone. They'll blame the quarterback for throwing the interception, even if, it's the receiver not being in the right place. That's one of the most difficult things about this job. And I know it's one of the frustrating things for coaches to try to communicate. One other thing in terms of injuries, you mentioned a couple of these guys have sort of battled through some things. Florida State's corners have not been healthy. And that was actually, I think, a factor early in the year, particularly against Oklahoma State in the first game. Florida State had, both Darby and Williams were really battling hamstring injuries at that point in the year. They were both held out the next week against the Citadel. They came back for Clemson, still didn't really look like themselves. And Jimbo Fisher's been saying that they're finally just now starting to get healthy. But they've really pushed through some hamstring injuries. Darby also had a little bit of an ankle issue that he was been dealing with. So, you talk about Darby being able to run with people, yes, but he also still hasn't. I'm not sure he's quite at the elite track speed that he had, that he normally would have at this point because of having to fight through that hamstring injury so far. So again, looking at some of these matchups, it's really fascinating to me to see how this is all going to work out. So when I'm looking at this, though, I'm curious from a Notre Dame side what you're more or less expecting to happen in this game. So if you had to guess, if you're looking into the crystal ball and it's 9:30 or 10 o'clock on Saturday night and you're in Tallahassee watching, what's happened so far and what's going to happen for the rest of that game?
I would guess you won't see a Notre Dame team that resembles last week's at all. And unfortunately for Notre Dame fans, I don't think you're going to see a Florida State team that has resembled the ones that have struggled a little bit on televised games or nationally televised games. I think Jameis Winston, his ability to compartmentalize is unquestioned, and I think he will have a tremendous game. Now, Notre Dame, they're not a defense that is likely to give up 43 points again. If it would happen, it would happen against Florida State, obviously, because I believe Winston never scored less than 34 in a game, and that was in the championship game. But the defense is going to play a lot better than fans saw them against North Carolina. That was very much Notre Dame's first brush with high, high, wild Oregon-style tempo. I mean, North Carolina, if I had to chart North Carolina or Oregon, I wouldn't be able to do it during the game. I missed about five plays trying to finish off my notes from the previous play. And I don't think Florida State's going to bring that type of tempo. I know teams will try and up-tempo Notre Dame now because they've seen how well it's worked. I think Arizona State will be able to do it later in the year. But I think you'll see a Notre Dame defense that plays inspired and, you know, not statistically its best game of the year, obviously, because of the opponent, but that really does play well and I think will surprise people nationally. I just think Winston is too much. I think you're going to see a Florida State team that, if they get a turnover on Notre Dame, is going to take that two-score lead, and they're going to be playing from that power position of having a two-score lead the entire game. I think if I were to break it down and say, well, what is the most likely scenario in this game, I think it's that Florida State wins by about 10, with Notre Dame having a chance early in the fourth quarter, but maybe not in the final 3 minutes of the game. I think the next likely scenario is that Florida State beats Notre Dame in a classic. And then the problem is, if you're looking to pick Notre Dame in an upset, I think it's slightly more likely, not by a lot, but I think it's slightly more likely that Florida State would really handle Notre Dame rather than Notre Dame goes down there and wins a classic against Florida State. So, you know, six and one half dozen right there. I'm not sure. I just think the first two scenarios are Florida State wins by 10 and is in control, or Florida State wins a classic. I'm not sure if that third scenario is Notre Dame wins the Classic, and I know that Notre Dame's not going to go down there and muckle them like they did in 2002 because I don't think Chris Ricks is going to jump out of the stands.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. But, I think that's a pretty fairly close to what my thoughts are in this, that I think, you know, the 10 point spread that's come in, although the game's been off the board at different points because of questions of off-the-field stuff. You know, the 10-point spread looks about right to me in a lot of ways. I agree with you. I think that what I said earlier this week is that I could see this game being a 3-point Notre Dame win or a 35-point Florida State win and not bat an eye at either result.
And my 10-point thing is kind of like I feel like Notre Dame is going to be fighting the good fight, uphill battle the whole time. Like, oh, they just needed that play, Notre Dame fans will be saying after the game, you know. But really, that play was going to get you to within 10 or within 9 or something like that, or within 7. I think if Notre Dame fans from, you know, back in the Charlie Weiss era, they played Ohio State in a bowl game, and Ohio State fans, of course, point out 600 yards. Well, it was a 7-point game with 3 minutes left, and Notre Dame had them on third down. I think you could see that. But you have that against Jameis Winston, and he's used to creating plays in those situations. So it's not just like Florida State gets lucky to keep pulling ahead. It's what they do. The better teams fight off teams that are fighting a good fight.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this Florida State team has been the way that they've done that all year. I mean, actually, I've had the impression that they've kind of been bored at different points this year, and then once teams actually hit them in the mouth, they actually respond by hitting back with a flurry and then, you know, more or less getting enough distance and then sort of getting bored again. And I don't think that we'll see that against Notre Dame. I don't think we'll see any boredom against a team of the caliber and of the brand of Notre Dame in this game. I do think that there are some definite concerns for Florida State. You know, if Golson is able to continually break down the break out outside and get extra time and create some plays outside the pocket, I think Notre Dame could hang around in this game a lot longer. I do think that the Florida State offensive line, which had struggled especially through the first month of the year, has started to round into shape a little bit, and there may be this could be potentially a chance for them to break out. But again, Notre Dame's got a good defensive line, so there are a lot of things where there's a counterpoint to a lot of things. I'm really curious to see how this goes. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised at a 3-point Notre Dame win, and I wouldn't be surprised at a 35-point Florida State win. It's just one of those years, I think, on both sides of the football here, where it's hard to know exactly how the football is going to bounce. The one thing I will say is that in terms of winning close games, the advantage that Florida State has is typically in close games, you want to have a couple things. You want to have, well, really, I would say three things. You want to have the better quarterback who's, you know, been there, done that, and you want to have a solid kicker. You know, generally speaking, if you're going to have two teams that are going to go down to the wire, you want the team with the reliable kicker. Well, Florida State, with Winston and with Aguayo, who actually may be their best player, their kicker, has themselves in a situation where it's going to be really difficult for any team to beat them down the wire because of that combination. You know, they can trust their kicker, they can trust their quarterback. Obviously, with Golson, Notre Dame can trust their quarterback. If a team is going to beat them close, it's going to have to be a team that has a comparable quarterback, like a Golson, that can do that. But again, for me, I want to have the quarterback, I want to have the kicker, and then I want to have a team with championship experience, a team that's actually won championships when, you know, when they've been challenged. And this team has shown that. That's the thing that I think Jimbo Fisher has been taking the most pride in so far this year, has been that this team has demonstrated their championship pedigree by continually getting up off the mat and then finishing fights by being very difficult to knock out. And that's the part where I think if it is close, it probably does go Florida State's way. And it's unlikely, I think, because of that, because of those factors, I would be surprised at some level to see a team win a close game there. But if you're going to do it, it's going to be a team with a quarterback like Golson. So I think by and large, our vision of what we're looking at here is pretty much the same. So
yeah, I agree. The one thing I will say is Notre Dame's kicker, Kyle Brinza, in fourth quarter and overtime situations in competitive games, is 18 for 18. He has never missed.
That's awfully good.
It's an incredible, yeah, because he's missed about 16 kicks in his career, and he just doesn't miss when it matters, and we've kind of talked to him about it, and he is, if he's involved in this game and you get a chance to interview him after the game, you should do yourself a favor, because for a guy that's missed 15 kicks in his life, he is the most confident, not kicker, athlete that I've ever talked to. So he has, someday request talking to Kyle Brinza at some point in your life, because it's a very interesting guy, and I mean, he compares himself to Mariano Rivera, so that's all you need to know from a Notre Dame kicker. But obviously, Florida State is the best kicker in the country, but Brinza is one that, if it comes down to it, he's a guy that's pretty clutch down there.
Well, the interesting thing is that Florida State, is that Aguayo has, you know, he's only missed one kick in his career, but he also hasn't had a whole lot of kicks that have really mattered. I mean, he had a couple in the national title game, but he hasn't had those, you know, 18 kicks where it's actually mattered, you know, in the fourth quarter kind of thing. So that's a little bit of a contrast in itself. But anyway, we can go ahead and wrap at this point. Thanks again, Tim, for joining us. This has been a real pleasure. I look forward to this Saturday night. Should be a real fun one.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason. I enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot. All right, that'll do it for us here on the Unconquered Podcast. On behalf of Noel Digest, the rest of the Noel Digest crew, I'm Jason Staples. Thanks to Tim O'Malley for joining us from IrishEyes.com. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. We'll be with you again soon. I made this.